The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. From the Department of Philosophy, canceled her office hours to be here, Professor Beth Oljar.
No, that was to attend the department meeting.
I'm just being funny. We know you...
But then I have to make them up on other days.
Right,
so.
Sunday.
No, Tuesday and Thursday, usually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have, like, 1 hour every day, like, always from 12 to 1 you're available, or is it different every day?
It's always, well, Monday and Wednesday from 1 to 2:30 and okay. Friday 1 to 3.
Oh. Some of the students outside your office at about 2 o'clock, and I said, well, she's in a departmental meeting, but she'll be out after a while.
Yeah, it was on Blackboard, and I announced it in class. They know, so. They don't have homework yet, so nobody cares about office hours, so. Then they will.
Professor Dave Chow from the College for Creative Studies, what about office hours for you? It's just always open when you're there.
Well, actually, I've got a secret code in my office in the sense I've got Christmas lights hanging from one of my lamps. If the Christmas lights are on, I'm around. If they're off, I'm elsewhere.
Interesting.
Cool. I've got Christmas lights.
Something about the Christmas lights.
I mean, but the thing is, my desk is probably a little bit more decorated than most. I've got a target from the Detroit Police gun range sitting on one side. I've got a gorilla. Mm-hmm. I've got disco ball. I've got all kinds of widgets and stuff around my
desk.
I'm just
imagining your students in the hallway. Have you met Dr. Chow? Yeah, that guy's Christmas lights are on. Yeah.
They will literally look for the Christmas lights. They know. They know.
They know
how to find you.
Dan, I don't think you're into having office hours lately. Maybe you are, and I just don't know
anymore.
About it. Mr. Dan Maggio.
I do miss that. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. So how are things with the first organization?
They're good. Very busy.
What are you up to this fall?
I'm still 5'6". But I...
I never would.
You know, I don't know about you, but if you're like me, you're 6'3", and amen. Yeah, exactly.
Up to my ideal weight if I were 7 feet tall. Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yep. Heading to Manchester, New Hampshire next week.
Oh, very
Spend,
cool.
Spend time at the mothership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I bet they are deep into the fall colors.
Yeah, they're getting close. And it's very, very pretty up there.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah. Cannot wait.
Rub it in.
I think we just heard the voice of Professor Jim Tubbs from Religious Studies.
Howdy.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Good.
How about you?
Pretty good. I can't tell what you're wearing under the waist, but your shirt
keep it
is
that
very
way.
Nice. Are we going to like talk about the Beth calendar or the Jim calendar on the air at all?
No, Jim doesn't have a calendar.
I don't have a
it's
calendar.
Just a flip chart.
Oh, flip chart.
Actually, I should do that. I should just do like a pop-up. No, I'm not going to say pop-up books.
I'm going to jump right from there to introducing Professor Chuck Hockett from ITS. How are things this week, Chuck?
We're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting
there. Okay. Right? Excellent. I saw walk by your office. Always busy. Always people doing stuff.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. How are things for you, Professor Jeff Boats?
Pretty good. Finally settling down.
Mm-hmm. After 2 weeks, huh?
After a couple of weeks, it gets a little crazy at first, you know.
Yeah.
The first 2 weeks are insane with meetings. That's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And signing
drop forms.
Drop forms.
And,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
I would say crazy. I don't miss the meetings.
Dave, your story of the Christmas lights reminded me of a well-known one in the world of chemistry, where there is a particularly cantankerous, who shall remain nameless here, professor who actually is one of the greatest organic chemists of all time and in all of history. And he had a traffic light installed at his office door that was always on red. Always on red, as in don't even bother at all times.
Who was that?
Okay? I will not say his name here. However, the rumor was... The day that he won the Nobel Prize 22 years ago, it went to yellow.
Oh.
Proceed with caution. Not here. Not here at this university.
Oh,
just a very well-known organic chemist. Somebody out there in the world. Nobody at the University of Detroit Mercy.
That's
that much
as well-known as organic chemists are.
Yeah, well, generally. Nobel laureate level, so that's got to be worth something.
I mean, not like philosophers are famous anymore either.
Well,
so,
you know,
unless they're, you know, dead.
That's good. If,
you mean,
it's,
if you're Monty Python's Flying Circus, you have a song about the dead flies.
Indeed.
That's right.
Great
Indeed.
Song.
That's
of
right.
course. Which I used to own on an album. Yes, vinyl. Did you ever hear the philosophies?
Yes, I have. I was about, just like about to call Beth
hysterical.
Bruce for the rest of the time here because philosophers must have the first name Bruce. What's your name, son? Ned. That's going to be a little confusing. Mind if we call you Bruce?
Zombie Bruce?
This is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. You know what? A Monty Python question set would be great. Let's order that in.
I would love a set of Monty Python.
That could be scary.
If you stump our panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump our panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP. You can fax the profs at 313-993-1166. Or you can send the questions, United States Postal Service, while you still can, to College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221-3038. We still have a little bit of a cleanup job here. With four questions remaining from Frank Burrows of Valencia, California. And we're going to jump right into something a little local. What were the two positions, that Al Kaline played during his 22-year baseball career with the Detroit Tigers?
Right field, first base.
And he was often...
DH,
which would have been the question mark, I think. Is it a position or not? I don't know. I'm a little bit disturbed. I just got to get up on my soapbox when I see the 2013 schedule for the Tigers, because starting next year, the leagues are odd, and interleague play happens year-round. It's a little bit weird.
And we're going to end up at the end of the semester playing a National League
team. We're going to be at Florida or something.
Yeah, the Marlins. But
there are rumors. There are rumors, which I think would be super cool, just because I think we should mess with the statistics, that for at least one part of that, if you're an American League team playing in a national park, mm-hmm. you must use the DH and reverse. So you could go to Comerica Park and watch Justin Verlander bat or Max Scherzer bat. I mean, it'd be hilariously embarrassing, but
That's going to be the time. He's going to bust out in his home crowd.
He likes to bat.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't he like one for 29 or something?
This summer.
I have a question. How is it that one league can have that role and the other league doesn't have that role?
Well, they're different leagues.
Yeah, but they're part of the same Major League Baseball. Shouldn't they not be adhering to the same set of rules?
You'd think.
No, I don't think so. Baseball's got a lot. I mean, baseball's the only one where there's no master template for the field, right?
Football
used to have two leagues and slightly different rules. Mm-hmm. When they combined, it was sort of like the AFL became the AFC and brought the forward pass with them, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true. University of Detroit's own Gus Duray invented the forward pass for college football with Newt Rockne at Notre Dame. I think everybody knows Notre Dame and not Gus Duray, but that's okay. The road on our campus is called Gus Duray Drive, and nobody knows it anymore because they took the signs down. It's kind of sad.
Which one?
The ring road that goes around from McNichols to Livernois. Yeah.
Gus Duray.
Yeah,
he had a road name.
Him and Lloyd Brazil for the old U of D football team. Yeah.
I did not know this. Yeah.
Pretty interesting stuff.
I didn't know that.
Do you know this? I bet you do.
Uh-oh.
The five Avengers that were on the cover of the very first issue of the comic book.
Iron Man, Captain America.
Iron Man.
No, Captain Not America. Captain America was until issue three.
Incredible Hulk.
Thor.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and Wasp, yes. Thor, Iron Man, the Hulk, Ant-Man and the Wasp, yes.
The Wasp?
Mm-hmm. Not the Incredible Hulk.
See, Drew would have known that.
Wasp?
Yeah. The Wasp was a tiny female. Yeah. I think.
Why haven't they made a movie called The Wasp?
Well, what's to stop them? They're going nuts with these movies.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the Martian Manhunter in Justice League. He's just not popular enough.
Yeah.
But there was a cartoon of the Tick, who was my favorite.
The Tick?
Hang 10 for justice. He actually was a tick, and he was a superhero, and he had a little moth or something, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Yeah. Arthur was his name?
He was hysterical.
Arthur.
Adamantus.
Adamant.
The cartoon?
That's right. Adamant is a singer.
Yeah.
And there's also...
Atom.
A-T-O-M.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yep. Enunciate.
Who is the... This is a little bit of a giveaway, but who knows? Who's the famous offspring of Andrew... and Monique Delacroix Bond.
James Bond?
Yeah, it was James Bond. I don't know if I could have named
him. How in the world do they...
names.
Monique Delacroix
Bond. Were they ever part of the novels?
I don't recall.
I'm assuming they were. They must have been, in the sort of mythos.
Okay. I haven't read all the novels, so...
Who was the first U.S. president to have his inaugural photo taken?
Oh.
Probably could do this mathematically if you think about the use of photography in American history.
Lincoln?
Buchanan.
If you know about
Buchanan, that's pretty good.
What year was Buchanan? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 57, no. Actually.
They had photography way before that.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. No, I believe you. I'm not calling you a liar.
Break it up, you two.
All right. We're not talking about if we have to stop this bus. To be photographed. It was the first president to have an inaugural
photo. Oh. Yeah. Well, that's the same. I mean, that's having photography, right?
No, not necessarily. I mean, Lincoln had
photography. Well, but you could have had photography without having the inauguration. The event. Yeah.
See how all the
Yeah.
But think about back then. You know, what was an exposure for photography? It must have been like.
Forever. Daguerreotypes, right?
Yeah, daguerreotypes.
Yeah, so.
And Buchanan was not known for having a lot of things to do.
That's true.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? You sit around and get your picture taken?
It's not like the country was falling apart or anything while he was president.
Well, he was not really reacting to the fact that it was falling apart very much.
Profs, I hope you'll join me in thanking Frank for all his great questions.
Yes, thanks,
Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
Send us more.
Yep, keep them coming. We have a set of questions here from our very own Professor Edwin DeWint from the Department of History.
Edwin.
Former host of this show with a beautiful, beautiful baritone that I can only begin to fall flat on my face trying to imitate. But he sends us the extremely dryly labeled history questions. I hope you guys have your engines revved up and ready, because here we go.
Check the dipstick.
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'll give you 1 minute to get ready, because we're going to have to take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
While we are taking a break, let's simply push the fact
here?
That
this...
we are at Tom's Tavern at 10093 West 7 Mile in Detroit, Michigan. And it is a great neighborhood tavern. It's been here since 1928. And it's still going strong. It has a wonderful ambiance.
Warm, friendly,
intimate. You name it.
Intimate is the operative word.
What else can we add?
Tilted floors.
White
tilted
floors.
That's right. That's right.
Glass joint.
They don't have matchbooks. That's the only deficit that I see.
They have their names just out today.
And they don't revolve. You do.
That's right.
This thing does not revolve.
So remember, Tom's Tavern. When you're thirsty, when you're hungry, when you're lonely. Whatever. Tom's Tavern.
And normally those go together.
Well, speak for yourself anyway.
Right. When you really need a date.
Yeah.
Where desperate people gather.
Oh, my gosh. My gosh, they've been here since before 1900.
Oh, really?
Wow.
This building has been standing here.
They've had one owner since 1926 to 1991.
It was a stagecoach stop.
That is marvelous.
Wow. And it was still serving liquor during Prohibition, right?
I'll be behind.
Yeah, I'll be behind.
In the castle.
That was the
only way to do
be.
It.
All right.
Yay. Thank you very much.
This is an institution that knew there was a higher law.
Yes.
That I don't know.
That's the Jesuit tradition.
And we are back with some questions written and penned by the very Edwin DeWint you were just listening to. How wonderful to hear his voice. All right, profs, here we go. The people who settled in the region of the Aegean Sea and created a culture that would be one of the major elements in the development of a distinctive Western culture are known today as the Greeks. Mm-hmm. However, they did not call themselves the Greeks. What did they call themselves? You can get a hint.
What's Greek for Greek?
Helen, something like that.
They call themselves Spartans or
Mycenaeans,
the locals or
The best hint I've got is if you know where the fraternities and sororities meet, also known as Greeks, of course, on our campus, where they meet to share ideas in one council, you may get a hint.
The bar?
The Penhelic? Oh.
They call themselves the Hellenes. So, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Culture.
Yeah, very good.
Isn't that the Greek word for Greece is something like that today?
Hellenic?
Mm-hmm.
Or Helen?
Helena or something like that.
Yep. You know what would make another really, really great question set? Native language terms for things or countries or something like that that are outside of regular English.
Like most tribes, they refer to themselves. The word for themselves means the people.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. In the 8th century BCE, the above-named people created a distinctive event that was designed to emphasize that all Hellenes were connected to each other. What was that event?
The Olympics.
The Olympic Games, yes, absolutely.
I thought it was the group hug.
I don't think they started with ping pong, but they ended with it.
In Athens later.
It could not have been clearer to me. I don't know about you, professors, watching the Olympics this summer. I came to the conclusion, I don't understand judo at all.
No.
Wow. I mean, they go at each other, and then they step away, and it's sort of like, hey.
They grab each other. They rip each other's clothes off. You're not allowed to. They don't even adjust their clothes, and they just kick each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then someone wins a gold medal. I'm like, good for us, I guess. So.
Well, the object in judo is to throw the other person, and there are different scoring systems. Basically, it used to be 1 point was for a win, and then you could have half, quarter, and eighth points depending on the quality of the throw and type of throw.
Well, I just want to know when Foxy Boxing is going to be an Olympic sport. That's all.
And I want to know why there is team rhythmic gymnastics.
I don't know what to tell you, Dan. However,
it has kept me awake.
Equestrian. I mean, to give the horse the medal?
The horse does all the work.
Well. After the badminton scandal of 2012.
But the best part of the Olympics this year, well, not the best, but one of the best, was when they disqualified one of the speed walkers.
Oh, yeah.
Which was sad, but entertaining at the same time, because you know they went up to her, two people, and they sort of just grabbed her and whispered to her, and then she was like, it was sad, but
what was the disqualification for?
It
turned into running.
Apparently, along the course, there are judges who, and if they see you, there are two rules: one, you have to keep at least both feet on the ground, and then the other one is something about your shifting. Your momentum and you have to keep one leg straight until you shift.
Yeah, but you have to shift your hips in a certain way to still be walking.
And that's why they walk funny. So you get like a red card, and if you accumulate three of those, then they approach you on the field and they escort you off. And
that sounds like ballroom dance.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that.
It's very precise. It's very, very precise.
And they cuffed her and threw her in a car.
And she's now in the end zone, New York Stadium or something like that, right?
Props in the early 6th century BCE in a part of Asia Minor that featured a substantial Greek-speaking population, a man known as Thales, by accurately predicting a forthcoming eclipse of the sun, laid the foundations for what would evolve into Western science. Mm-hmm. In their inquiries into the natural world, Thales and others like him were driven by one basic conviction. What was it?
Did everything with water.
I think Beth just needs to find the right phraseology because I know you know about him.
The concern was the problem of the one and the many.
Okay.
Appearance and change. What is the one thing that unifies all?
Yeah. The natural phenomena have natural explanation. You use what you see to be
that's
able to
makes
explain
it. Philosophy or science instead of myth.
Exactly.
Thales is referred to as the father of science for that.
That's right. That's right. Thales of, was it Miletus or Miletus?
Miletus.
Inquiry into the world of nature took a further turn in the 5th century BCE and especially associated with the city of Athens. There was an emphasis on examining as intensely as possible the nature of human beings, the extent to which they differed from other animals, as well as the whole question of human conduct and morals.
Thank you, Socrates.
Mm-hmm. One person who stands out in this process was a man who never wrote a word in his life, but devoted himself to extended face-to-face discussions with other Athenians. Who was this man?
Socrates.
So great.
Bill and Ted.
We're dust in the wind. That's what he's famous for saying.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be another Bill and Ted sequel. It's coming soon. I have no idea what they're going to do without George Carlin, but we'll see what they can put together. In 399 BCE, this man was charged by the acting government of Athens with corrupting the youth of Athens with his ideas. What happened to him, though?
They made him drink hemlock. He sentenced to death.
He killed himself rather than be executed.
It's really interesting. Edwin has here, he was compelled to commit suicide. It's a very interesting phrase.
They make you drink poison.
It's not really suicide, then.
And that charge of corrupting the youth actually has never gone away because I get hit with it frequently. You got hit with it recently.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
We'll have to hear more about that.
It's a proud tale.
We know Jeff corrupts the youth. That's perfectly fine here. That's all.
Corrupting good Catholic.
What is it again? 4π². You're going to be 4π².
4π².
Okay. All right. The so-called Golden Age of Athens, associated with the 5th century BCE, was made possible especially by the defeat by the Greeks of what empire? The Persian Empire. That's right.
Which probably did not go down as in the movie 300, but 300 is an awesome movie anyway.
It is.
Love it.
Continuing on with this extremely chronological set of questions, in the 4th century BCE, Greek culture, ideas, and values were intermingled with those of Near and Middle Eastern society, primarily because of military conquests of the varying kingdoms of the East by a young Macedonian ruler in general with a serious drinking problem. We love you, Edmund. Who is this conqueror?
Alexander.
Yes,
I love this.
Son of Philip.
Whose teacher was the father of science among philosophers? Who was Alexander the Great's tutor?
Aristotle.
Aristotle? Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I should remember this. I mean, I actually have PowerPoint slides I'm picturing in my head from my math history class that I taught to all these people.
Who was also Macedonian.
Yeah. Hmm.
The rise of Rome as the dominant political and cultural power in the Mediterranean world owed much to its military focus and subsequent conquest of older Eastern kingdoms, mm-hmm. often described by many historians as an entity that borrowed most of its ideas, including its religions, from these conquered peoples. What, in fact, alongside sheer military power, were the Romans actually good at?
Engineering.
Engineering is in the wheelhouse.
Extremely.
But law. I think that sort of a bigger law is getting there. Edwin says these are sometimes described as like the ancient world's MBAs. I think that's pretty cool. He says it's organization, that they donated logistical organization.
In fact, on one of his syllabi for an older syllabi for Intro to History, when Edwin gets to the Romans, he calls them the first Borg.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
That's not
resistance is futile.
There's a scene in Monty Python: The Life of Brian about what have the Romans ever done for us, right?
Yes.
And then they end up listing like,
yeah. Yeah, all the things.
Well,
yep,
police
right.
And education and drinking water and
aqueducts
and civil government and
sanitation.
But
and
other
their,
than that,
and their
the
political
Romans
organization
ever
is still reflected in the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. Same
that's
names,
right.
In fact.
Oh, not just that, but I mean the root of Democratic Republic. There probably is no Democratic Republic without election of senators and, you know,
well,
that
we
sort
have
of thing.
Democracy preceded the Romans.
Democracy preceded the Romans?
Athenian democracy, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
But
that
there was sense. Much more. Theirs was much more sort of direct.
I'm thinking popular. Practice. Yeah, I'm thinking practice.
Mob rule.
Not representative democracy like we have now.
Right. The well, the illusion of it, at least.
That's right.
The acceptance and even active promotion of Christianity from the early years of the 4th century CE onward was especially associated with which Roman emperor?
Constantine.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. It says here, Constantine expanded the basic toleration granted to Christians by the pagan emperor Galerius by granting Christian churches special privilege. So mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting.
And then Justinian kept it going by actively persecuting pagan teachers throughout
that's
the empire.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the wake of decline and eventual abandonment of the western part of the Roman Empire by its eastern part in the 5th century CE, the Christian church found itself suddenly as the most visible representative of the old Roman way of life, and it became the embodiment and preserver of the ancient heritage in the West. What group was especially associated with that preservation process?
Well, Irish monks at one
monks,
point.
Yeah, monks in general. Yeah. People who went to
the ancient
protect
philosophy.
The stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The monastic tradition. That makes
think
sense.
About the monastic tradition. Absolutely. The 11th and 12th centuries in the West have often been described as an epoch of major reorganization, redefinition of institution, tradition, and power structure. Mm-hmm. A religious revolution that occurred in the mid-11th century and continued into the 12th was focused on the assertion of supreme power in religious matters by what individual?
The Pope.
The Pope, also known as the Bishop of Rome. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, but meanwhile, much of the great knowledge of the world was flourishing in the madrasas of the Middle East and Northern Africa,
mm-hmm.
where early Islam was encouraging study of math, especially
well,
science.
Then, yeah.
Yep.
And then when the Moors invaded in the 13th century, they
we
brought all those
literacy,
mm-hmm.
logical and scientific texts of Aristotle got
yep.
were recovered.
Mm-hmm. The expansion of Western intellectual life in the 11th and 12th centuries was driven by the recapturing and application of the writings of what ancient Greek thinker?
The master of all who know. The
yep.
philosopher with a capital P, Aquinas calls him.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You've read Aquinas.
Yeah, I know. I read
Aristotle.
Aristotle, yeah, absolutely.
The big A.
I'm excited about my stomach ache. Yes, exactly. That's what I remember from Vaughn Adams. We'll talk about it some other time. I'm excited about my stomach ache because I know there's something wrong with me. In the 14th and 15th centuries, there was a renewed interest in and enthusiasm for the culture of the ancient Romans and Greeks, characterized by a desire to see the ancient past as a model for life in the present. We've never heard that before. This cultural phenomenon had a very special name, invented by a French historian in the mid-19th century, assigned to it. What is the name?
The Renaissance.
The Renaissance is what I have here. I just think it's interesting. It's like, the good old days, you know. 40 years later, that's what they say. That's the timetable these days.
Yes, the 1950s, when it was great to be an American unless you were black or Latino or
exactly.
a woman or gay.
Or not white.
Or non-white.
Or, yes.
A religious revolution that began in the 16th century and is still a major element of present-day society is called the Reformation. Mm-hmm. Like the so-called Renaissance phenomenon, it insisted Christianity had to return to its early roots, rejecting in the process institutions, ideas, and practices that had grown up within Christianity for some 1,000 years. Who is the religious leader most associated with this revolution in the German
era? Martin Luther.
Yep, Martin Luther himself.
Jim, have you seen the film with Joseph Fiennes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love the it's scene good. Where he's giving Frederick the Wise, he's giving him the New Testament, which he's written in German.
Yeah.
And Peter Ustinov exactly. plays, and he's like reaching out for it, like, give me my gift, right? Give me my, because, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People can read the Bible in their own language, then...
Of course, it
led to peasant revolts and all kinds of political...
It did. Yeah.
Well, exactly. With regard to Martin Luther, I just remember, you know, when we were talking about revising our core, there ended up being 95 points that we wanted our students to learn. I thought, we ought to nail these to the president's door.
Do you remember what day Luther posted?
It was All Souls Day, 1517.
It was October 31st, yes. Traditionally speaking. It was
August 9th.
But that whole...
The eve of All Souls.
I mean, yes. The idea of people, major thinkers, writing in their own languages, Galileo writing in Italian and Luther in German and Descartes in French, that was hugely revolutionary.
Yep, hugely. Who was the French-born religious leader associated with this revolution in places like Switzerland,
Calvin.
The Netherlands, British
Jean
Isles?
Calvin.
Yep, Jean Calvin. Calvin College in the state of Michigan, named after him. In addition to the intellectual, cultural, and religious revolutions of the 15th and 16th centuries, there was also a veritable revolution in scientific mm-hmm. thinking from the 16th century well into the present.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of this revolution is often associated with a book written by a Polish monk known as Copernicus, mm-hmm. and which challenged the then current astronomy by asserting...
Heliocentrism.
Yeah, heliocentrism. The sun is the center of the cosmos.
Yep. On the revolutions of the spheres.
And there we go.
I've actually read part of it.
The new science reached a climax with this publication in 1687 of a book of mathematical principles in natural philosophy written by
Isaac Newton.
It was Principia, right?
Yeah. Principia Mathematica.
Yep. And last, but most certainly not least, professors, the new cultural, scientific, and religious ideas associated with the revolutionary movement starting in the late 14th centuries and continuing for a long period thereafter were made accessible to large numbers of people primarily because of this invention.
The printing press.
The printing press. Absolutely. What Don't
timing?
Ask for it any better
what
than that,
timing?
Folks.
Wow.
Can you believe
impressive.
It?
How awesome are we? Seriously.
I'm going to give us a 9. Professor Boats.
Gutenberg knocked everyone.
Professor Hockett.
Go Tigers.
Professor Dubs.
Have a great weekend.
Professor Maggio.
Bonjour.
Professor Chow.
Sure, whatever you say.
Professor Oljar.
Brains.
That's all the time we have for today. Now these words.
Email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu, or you may fax them to 313-993-1166. Attention, Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Adam Winbigler, technically directed by Michael Jason, but our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.